You're listening to Talking Smart, the official podcast of the International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers. This is Paul Pimentel, and I'm joined today by my co-hosts, Ariana Jones from Smart Communications, and Ben Nagy from Smart TD Communications, as well as Michael Blaine, who is producing this episode.
The corporation they worked for knew what was in that train. The fact that they ordered those men and women out there to do that work, literally crawling around the equipment in the contaminated dirt, there were puddles of viscous material that had so saturated the ground that it had formed puddles of what came out of those cars. And they were walking in it, doing their jobs. And now they're sick. It's not a mystery.
Look, let's be honest, when it comes to combating the railroads, what I need is membership engagement, membership interest, membership participation. I mean, we need the members to win this fight.
The February 3rd Norfolk Southern derailment and fire that occurred in East Palestine, Ohio, as well as subsequent rail accidents in the months since, have placed rail carriers' disregard for safety in the precision scheduled railroading era in the harshest of spotlights. The visual of a toxic plume of black smoke rising above the Ohio village and the environmental ramifications to the people in East Palestine and the surrounding region have deservedly gained the attention of the national media. The general public and politicians alike all have been alerted to the dangers of PSR that our members have been warning about for years. Transportation Division Alternate National Legislative Director Jared Cassidy and TD Government Affairs Representative Daniel Banks have joined us today to talk about how rail safety can be improved and advanced as the industry learns from this disaster. Ben Nagy from Smart TD Communications in Cleveland and Ariana Jones from Smart Communications in Washington, D.C. sat down with them to talk about this important topic, which has been dominating national headlines. In addition, listen for the open mic segment with General President Joseph Sellers at the end of this episode, where he discusses a question about what SMART is doing to recruit non-union workers to help meet the rapidly growing demand for sheet metal workers stemming from mega projects, infrastructure work, and other large construction jobs.
Jared and Dan, thank you very much for appearing on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So first off, there's been a massive reaction, especially from Ohio, Pennsylvania senators, and from senators all around the nation to this disaster, to the point where sponsors from opposite sides of the spectrum have indicated their support for national rail safety legislation. Jared, please tell us about the bill, which is known as the Railway Safety Act of 2023.
Sure. So the Railway Safety Act of 2023, as you stated, has been born from the Ohio senators, which is Senator Brown and Senator Vance, as well as the Pennsylvania senators of Mr. Fetterman and Mr. Casey. And then we also have additional supporters from Senator Rubio and Senator Hawley out of Missouri. And so, you know, it speaks to the seriousness of the devastation that has been done to the rail industry since the implementation of precision scheduled railroading. And it speaks to the fact that our predictions are now coming into fruition. And it's both a shame and a frustration, and to be quite frank, a very anger-filled reaction from us that it took all of this time for our predictions to come into fruition here. And so, you know, it's just shocking to see that all of these derailments are taking place. Just this morning, we experienced a fatality on the Norfolk Southern Railroad. All of these things can be brought back to precision scheduled railroading and what it's done. And thankfully, our politicians in D.C. are starting to see it and take action. Like I said, it's a shame that it took literally a chemical spill to make it happen. But now we got to make sure that we keep the momentum going. We don't let time work against us in this instance, and that we keep the motivation and the pressure up and we get something over the finish line that will actually work to improve rail safety.
You know, I know a lot of people are watching this unfold and they're wondering what they can do. So, Dan, how do people show their support?
Well, that's a great question. I think I'd start off with the importance of showing that support. Right now is the time. I know we often say, what's it going to take? When's it going to happen? And who's going to need to do it? The answer is now. And the answer is all of us. And we need to start off by answering the emails that we receive from our union. These emails that come in and say action network or action needed, they aren't hyperbole. We need the action. Today's the day. And we need to capture the momentum that Jared spoke to while we have it. So I would ask for all of us to do a better job answering the bell. We need to act in solidarity, not in name only. And then also, if you're not receiving these emails and you're not receiving these text messages, we desperately need you to get on the website and go to the Get Involved tab in the top right and click the Action Center. Give us your email address and your name, and we will send you the emails that will easily direct you to your representative. Will help you help us. And then also, if you can text the word SMART to 67336, that'll get you in the Action Network to where we can get a hold of you in text messages in emergency situations when we desperately need your legislators to hear from you. So I would ask you to do those two things, smart-union.org under the Get Involved and Action Center. Give us your email address and get involved so we can stand shoulder to shoulder and get something done.
And, you know, another thing that people can do, you know, the Smart app, people can update their information via the Smart app. Also, just contact your local SMT or your local officers if you don't want to get another app on your phone. You know, we prefer that you have the app on the phone because that's the easiest and most efficient way that we can get the union in your pockets so that we can mobilize and be active. So, you know, thank you for that, Dan. And speaking of the situation that we're dealing with now, Jared, we've seen it out in the media already with the carrier mouthpieces, AAR, obviously. You know, they're trying to slow roll things. They've been doing damage control. They're saying, hey, we've got a really, really strong safety record, to save some face in the public, saying, oh yeah, 99.1% of the toxic loads that we have to haul and are tasked with to haul make it to their destination safety. You know, this is a real outlier. You know, what are we doing out in the media sphere to kind of counteract that? Because, you know, they're trying to act like it's business as usual. Is this business as usual? How have we been speaking out to say, hey, this is the time something needs to be done?
Let me start by saying what happened in East Palestine, what happened on Norfolk Southern just outside of Detroit, what happened in Springfield, Ohio on Norfolk Southern, all these derailments is not okay. East Palestine is not okay. And Norfolk Southern, the AAR, all of the other railroad mouthpieces that you described are wanting you to believe that they somehow have your safety in the front of mind. They want you to accept the fact that we do haul hazardous materials over land safer than any other mode of transportation. And that's a true fact, but that doesn't make this okay. This accident, all of these accidents, they're not okay. Precision scheduled railroading and the effect it's having is not okay. And what they're doing is they're trying to spin this web of lies that they do all the time after anything happens like this. They're telling people that we need to wait on the NTSB recommendation. We shouldn't act too hastily. Here's the thing about that. They want you to wait on the NTSB recommendation, one, because it's going to probably take about 18 months. And in that time period, people are going to forget like they naturally do with most things. The other piece to that is the NTSB recommendations are not obligatory. The railroads do not have to adopt or accept them in any capacity, nor do they hardly ever do that. And so they know whatever the NTSB says, if it doesn't fit their PSR model or whatever their greedy hands want to get their fingers on, they're not actually going to do it. And so what we're doing to combat that is trying to get ourselves in the media at any opportunity that we have. Because of East Palestine, we have had an opportunity, or excuse me, a lot more invitations coming in. I don't know how to explain it. We've had more than I've ever experienced since I've been an officer in this union. I single-handedly have probably done at least a dozen. I know Greg Hines, our national legislative director, has probably done at least a dozen. And I would say our president, Jeremy Ferguson's probably done two dozen or more. But we've got to keep that drive. We've got to keep that push. We cannot let East Palestine slip away, because here's the reality of what's happening. Norfolk Southern experienced a derailment just outside of Detroit in an area known as Rougemere. That derailment was a very long train, over 9,300 feet, that was mixed manifest, that most likely was built incorrectly. And it resulted in a derailment that was exacerbated strictly because of the length of the train and the way the weight was displaced in it. And the same issue with Springfield, Ohio. Here again, we even have a longer train, which is a very long train. It's mixed manifest. You've got weight dispersed throughout, but it's not built right because precision scheduled railroading does not allow for the time it takes to order your cars in a way that actually makes sense as far as a physical nature goes. And I will say quickly, as an engineer, your ideal train makeup or train placement is to have the majority of your weight towards the front end, closest to the locomotive, with the lighter stuff in the back. But because of precision scheduled railroading, the time it takes to build a train right, they're just all they're concerning themselves with these days is just getting the trains put together as quickly as possible so no one incurs overtime. And now you have more weight on the rear end than we've ever had. In fact, there's even been rule changes to lighten or ease the burden on the railroad so that they can do this type of work or change. And, you know, you have that weight come crashing in the moment a car derails, and it just exacerbates the damage that's done in a derailment. It exacerbates the likelihood for a hazardous materials release, and it exacerbates the amount of cars that are involved in the wreck because all of that momentum or inertia comes crashing in. And so when I speak of these other derailments in saying that they're not okay, it's because they're not okay. This is not a way of doing business. It's not acceptable to be derailing trains. East Palestine occurred, Detroit occurred, Springfield occurred. Nothing has changed today in the industry since any of these accidents. If something does not change today or tomorrow, they're going to continue happening. We are absolutely flirting with, I shouldn't say we, the railroads are flirting with disaster by refusing to make changes that are meaningful. We have fundamental operational practices that are sound, that we know that work. We can right size our trains. We can build our trains in ways that make sense. We can use the defect detectors as they're designed to do. Very simple, not expensive things that are even more efficient, in my opinion, that are better for service. They're better for the industry. We can start doing these types of changes to make things better, to put an end to PSR, because that is what has to happen. And we've got to continue talking in the media. We've got to continue as a union, making our cries heard. We cannot blow the whistle. As we've said in the past, we have got to scream into the bullhorn. Anybody that will listen, we've got to keep this pressure going, because the trajectory that we're on right now is very, very dangerous. There was a 300-car coal train in Nebraska 2 weeks ago that derailed over 30 cars. That train was over 3 miles long and weighed almost 50,000 tons, if I recall, maybe 45,000 tons. These things, they are massive, massive vehicles. We cannot afford to have them keep continuing to fall off the rails the way they're doing with the amounts of hazardous materials that we haul. If it happens in an urban area, God forbid the damage and harm that it could do to the infrastructure and to the people alike. And so we have got to continue doing what we're doing with the news and pushing that so that everyone understands what our message is, what the risk is, and what our desire for change is.
I mean, there's obviously a sense of urgency here that makes it kind of an all hands on deck situation. So are we seeing other labor voices speak up about this? What are they saying?
Yeah, so all the rail labor is kind of united here in doing what we're doing as far as the media is going. On the Hill, we're also united too. Our efforts are one, in as much as that we are lobbying our representatives to make mindful or sound changes in the railroad industry. There are concerns with the other unions that aren't necessarily as apparent for our crafts. For example, the maintenance away folks are down there digging in the dirt, laying rail, pouring ballast, dirt that's contaminated, that has chemicals in it, that's hazardous. They're reporting rashes, they're reporting headaches. They're reporting bloody noses. They're reporting the exact same things the people of East Palestine have been reporting. And they're being forced out there to dig in this dirt without any type of protection, whether it's respiratory or physical or anything. They're just being told to go work. And as we sit and record this podcast, Norfolk Southern is allegedly out there trying to clean the dirt, but they're only going to do it one track at a time. Why they didn't do it when the accident occurred speaks to the greed or the level of the greed of these railroads. You know, when they had the opportunity to dig everything, I mean, the ground was already tore up. All they had to do was dig the ground up, pull the contaminated soil, take it to a place where they could handle it appropriately, make sure the ground was ready for more dirt so that we could bring it in a safe way. But instead, no, we had to get that track down as quickly as possible. The track and the trains were running while the cars were still sitting there, too contaminated to even look at. And now, because of the people of East Palestine have been kicking and screaming, and rightfully so, about what they're experiencing, Norfolk Southern has agreed to pull up the tracks one at a time, mind you, so that their trains can keep moving to get the soil clean. And that speaks to the dangers of what our other unions are experiencing. And it also speaks to why we're united in this. We all are facing similar dangers. We're all experiencing similar frustrations. And we all have the same angers over what precision scheduled railroading has done to the industry, especially from a labor perspective.
Just to build on that, being in Cleveland, I was able to get down to East Palestine shortly after the derailment, and I saw our brothers in the BMWED, the maintenance away guys out there in mass, They were there to work. They didn't even have a paper mask on. When I was anywhere close, I was told by them, hey, you're going to want to throw away those boots. We don't know what we're walking in, but it's nasty stuff and it's dangerous. They were telling me this with no protection for themselves. And now, as Jared pointed out, they're suffering. And I'm sorry, the corporation they worked for knew what was in that train. The fact that they ordered those men and women out there to do that work, literally crawling around the equipment in the contaminated dirt, there were puddles of viscous material that had so saturated the ground that it had formed puddles of what came out of those cars. And they were walking in it, doing their jobs. And now they're sick. It's not a mystery. Sorry if I got a little emotional about that.
No, it's well-deserved. And there's going to be a Senate hearing in a couple of days. Probably it will have already occurred by the time this is put out. But that's one of the things that the carrier needs to be accountable for, is the fact that they, you were out there, you saw what happened. So this is something that absolutely should not go away. And talking about that, you both were at the scene at various points of this disaster. And our union is also a party to the investigation by the NTSB. So Jared, just for the folks who might not be familiar, how does this investigation process work? And can we expect anything from it as far as some future safety enhancements that occur in the future?
Sure. So the National Transportation Safety Board is the top authority when it comes to safety for modes of transportation in the United States of America. And they have a rail division that is dedicated to railroading, obviously. And when they are launched to an investigation or dispatched to an investigation at the scene of a major accident, by their charter, they are required to reach out to the employees' representatives to see if they want to be what they call a party to the investigation. Now, basically what a party means is that you sign a non-disclosure agreement to assist the NTSB throughout the entirety of the investigation, but it also means that you're not able to share the finer details of what's happening. I can speak to some of the more obvious stuff that's been released via news sources or through press release from the NTSB itself, but ultimately what it means is that we kind of hold our cards close to the chest, and our sole focus is on assisting the NTSB to get to an ability or the opportunity to determine the actual cause, the root cause of the accident, as well as contributing factors. We do have the National Safety Team, which I'm the director of for the Smart Transportation Division. It's comprised of 20 folks that are geographically located. Jeff Mitchell, who is in Northwest Kentucky or Northern Kentucky in the Cincinnati area, was dispatched or sent out to this investigation on our behalf. He was there throughout the entirety of the investigation with the NTSB. He was able to stand side by side with the investigators, watch everything that was done, have influence into what was seen or learned from the investigation, was part of all of the interviews that are done in the process, has seen all of the event recorders, downloads, things of that nature. And so what the NTSB does is they rightfully acknowledge that they are not experts in the field, if you will. The expert voice comes from labor itself. And so they invite us in, and that's what Jeff did. He offered his expertise as a conductor and as an engineer, and we're able to influence what the NTSB is doing as far as coming to all these conclusions. And so right now, obviously, we're in the very early phases. They've released a preliminary report, which basically speaks to a bad axle or a bad bearing. And that's pretty obvious. If you look at the video and know hardly anything about railroading, you can tell there was something wrong with that one particular wheel. So anyway, that's in a nutshell where we are with the early phases of it. They will start going into the lab and looking at the video, looking at downloads. Give quite a deep dive and an analytical review over what they've seen and what they have. NTSB will use its experts to start looking into stuff and making some determinations. But one of the things that's going to be unique in this investigation that I've not ever seen before is NTSB has announced that they're going to hold a hearing on site in East Palestine so that the residents of East Palestine have the opportunity to testify. They also have the opportunity to talk about the health effects that they've experienced coming out of this derailment. And NTSB will very much have an interest in that, not just what caused the actual accident, but also how we can improve response from emergency responders, how we can prevent the hazardous material release, and what we can do better about addressing their medical needs and also preventing that in the future.
Are you a smart sheet metal member who is out of work and willing to travel to the jurisdiction of other smart locals to work? If so, your first step should be to contact your local union office and then let them know that you're looking to travel. Also, check out the Sheet Metal Job Bank on the SMART website at smart-union.org. Job bank listings typically reflect large projects. To receive text updates about new traveler opportunities, text Job Bank to 67336. Again, that's Job Bank to 67336. Message and data rates may apply.
This disaster hasn't just gained the attention of DC legislators. There are now safety bills being advanced by legislative directors in nearly 20 states. Dan, can you give us a sense of what the bills look like or are trying to address?
Yeah, and actually, I can tell you that today I looked at the website and it actually looks like it's up to 21 states. So I'll have to dig into that a little deeper. So we're over 40% of the states in the country that are taking independent moves to kind of pull at these threads of PSR. It's starting to come unraveled, and our state legislative directors are doing a good job of trying to expedite that process. Most of these bills, a lot of them are very similar. They're all focused on two-person crews. They're trying to legislate that for themselves within their states in case it doesn't fall together on a national level. They're also looking at train lengths. These are some of the basic tenets of PSR. So they're trying to do that. In Utah, they've had a very successful bill that's waiting for signature from the governor that puts an Office of Rail Safety together and is able to look at things on a ballast level, such as walkway safety and lighting and yards, which could have helped today in the Norfolk Southern situation that Jared spoke to. We're really getting after it. We're trying on a national level and then as state by state level to shore up some common sense legislation in the face of PSR, because we're starting to have legislators see the underbelly of this animal called PSR, and we're trying to take it out when we have the opportunity. And I, for one, would like to thank all of the SLDs in the country for putting on a good show of getting these legislations up and running in short notice and trying to take advantage of the moment. Oh, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out, in Ohio, they're also trying to take the bull by the horns with the defect detectors. There's been a lot made of defect detectors, the use of their technology and whatnot in the East Palestine scenario. And the SLD, Clyde Whitaker here in Ohio, has put forward a legislation that's made it across the line in the State House of Representatives to dictate that defect detectors can no longer be voluntary, which is shocking to a lot of people that they're currently not mandatory. He's trying to make them so they are mandatory in his state, that they have a heat threshold for hot box detectors, that no longer will the messages go to a back room in another state to a manager at a desk, but that they will tell the crew that there's a problem and let them assess the situation. It's a scenario where a lot of us with rail experience know the defect detector goes off and it says, no defects, no defects. But in reality, it's telling somebody in a back room somewhere that, hey, we're trending here. We might have ourselves an issue. Well, if it's my butt on the train and it's me that's going to have to clean it up, you need to be telling me the truth. And so that's one thing that Clyde's trying to get done in that defect detector legislation. So we've got a lot of good things happening and a lot of best demonstrated practices that these guys are sharing with each other. And hopefully it's all going to come together soon. We've got Utah across the line waiting for the signature, and a lot of other states are on their heels trying to do the same thing. So we have a lot of good things to report there.
And, you know, it's, as Jared said before, it's a shame that it came to something like this in order for some progress to be made. There has been some incremental progress. So, and I'll throw this out to both of you. I mean, we have seen some incremental progress. DOT Secretary Buttigieg, he's come out and pretty much influenced the carriers to join the confidential close call reporting system, the C3RS system, kind of C3PO, C3RS, and other measures that he has proposed. And I'll have you both speak on that. But, you know, is there a chance that this rail disaster in East Palestine, could this finally be the moment that makes the nation finally hold the rail carriers accountable? Can we have them finally place safety rather than the bottom line at the core of every decision? Every time that the guys from the carriers speak, they always say it makes me sick. They say safety is our top priority. It never, ever is. We've already seen this community threatened by a disaster, and we've seen events like Loch Megantic. There's a list that goes on and on about these derailments. What is it going to take?
I wish I had that answer, Ben. You're asking if we're going to get it done in this, after this accident, and I'm hopeful. Obviously, we have a lot of good traction at the moment, but we cannot downplay or disregard the railroad lobbying efforts that are currently ongoing in the states and on the Hill in D.C. They have a lot of money in their PAC funds, and they have their officers contributing, which we need to be able to counter through the PAC with our members. But unfortunately, their money is larger than ours at this point. That doesn't have to be the case, but it is what it is. And so, you know, I can't tell you that we're going to get it done. Obviously, it's my job to get it done. And I assert that I will fight like hell to make sure that we get there. But I am not going to be the underdog in this fight that just takes for granted we're going to get there because I have failed to account for the railroad's lobbyist or ability to lobby and influence on the Hill strictly because of their amount of money and the way that they do their job. And so, you know, we have a lot of changes coming. We have a lot of good opportunity. We are not done with the Railroad Safety Act of 2023. We already have the Derail Act coming out of Rep. DeLuzio office in Pennsylvania, and we have Senator Sanders is poised to release additional safety legislation, as is Congresswoman Stansberry and many other offices. So we have more legislation coming that speaks to rail safety. We are going to continue pushing. The key here is not letting this thing slip away. We have got to let folks know that nothing has changed, that the potential is still there for more disaster. And we have got to fight as hard as we can to make sure that we beat them by voice on the Hill and in the legislatures of these state capitals. You know, you were talking about the letter from Secretary Buttigieg. That's a good letter, and those are good things. I am a firm believer in the C3RS program and its ability to bring transparency and accountability to the industry. It'll give our folks an opportunity to report close calls or unsafe conditions without fear of harassment or intimidation by doing so in a confidential way. And so what that will give us is more data. You know, right now the railroads are the sole keepers of data. Everything that comes from data or any data source strictly derives from the railroads in this industry, and that's unacceptable. Even the FRA has to depend on a railroad to tell them what's going on because they're not able to police everything. And that notion alone is absolutely absurd. And so if you use the C3RS program, the labor stakeholders will be able to not only report what they're experiencing in the field, we'll be able to have access to those reports, we'll be able to see what's going on, we'll be able to ascertain that the FRA is holding the railroads accountable for the reports that we now have information on. We'll be able to hold the FRA accountable to make sure they're doing what they should be doing in the way of enforcements and punitive or civil punishment. And so we got a lot of good things going. The one area that I felt like the Secretary's letter kind of didn't go far enough is within the train length. We have got to put a number on the train length. Someone has got to step up to the plate, say what the number is, put a definition of very long trains, and so we can get moving on that, because right now it's just up in the air. There is no definition, and everybody kind of looks around the room when you talk about very long trains, because no one actually knows what it is. Obviously, we're pushing between 7,500 and 8,500 feet. But right now, in this moment, we need someone to say this is the longest the train's going to be, and that's that. And so I'm hopeful we get there quite quickly. I think we will. But look, let's be honest, when it comes to combating the railroads, what I need is membership engagement, membership interest, membership participation. I mean, we need the members to win this fight. My job is to lobby and kind of spread that voice, but we have got to have the membership speaking because they are the constituents. They are the influencers. You know, the union is the voice of many, but we need the many voices to be speaking as one to be effective here. And that's my ask for our union.
Right. And I'd like to just put my two cents in on that. As Jared referred to, we're up against organizations with bottomless lobbying dollars, bottomless. They literally will not be outspent. So that's not where we can engage them. We got to do what we can on that front. But when you're outgunned, you have to outnumber them. And if Jared and Greg Hines are the only two voices that these people are hearing, they've got the quintessential snowball's chance in hell. But we've got 100,000 snowballs in our hands. If we get them all aimed in the right direction, we can change the temperature of that room with 100,000 snowballs. So that's what we need to do. We have to arm them with our voices, because if not now, it's not going to happen. So we got to give them what we can. We can't compete with the companies that have $30 billion of profit a year. So we've got to do what we can. Answer your emails.
John and Dan, I want to thank you for taking time out of your hectic schedules to speak with us. We hope that members from all of SMART realize that these rail safety issues do not exist in a vacuum and not only affect people who work on the railroad. Just look at the community of East Palestine and you can see that. It is going to take all of us to keep up the momentum, keep our eyes open, and keep people in power engaged to fix the damage to our nation that has been done by precision scheduled railroading. I want to thank you both for being here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, all.
Thank you, Rihanna.
This is Daryl Roberts, Director of Organizing at SMART. In the next few months and years, SMART members will see an enormous amount of work with incoming mega projects everywhere from Texas and Tennessee to New York. If you know anyone interested in the sheet metal or transportation industries, or if you know anyone currently working non-union in our industry, tell them to visit smartcareers.org, where they can learn about all the benefits of joining our union. Spread the word. Visit smartcareers.org today for information on higher pay, better benefits, and a secure retirement.
Welcome to our open mic segment with General President Joe Sellers. General President Sellers, thank you for being on today's program.
Hey, thank you, Paul and Michael. Appreciate the opportunity again to do this Q&A. And this is really a good segment with our podcast and the other things that our communications department's doing to make sure our members get all the information. So thank you again.
Thank you. So members are realizing there's a lot of work coming up around the country, over 80 projects that are worth over $1 billion and more. Mega projects seem to be popping up one every other day. And with this, there's going to be a major demand for a large workforce, especially in a lot of places around the country. General President Sellers, can you tell us what SMART is doing to recruit non-union workers for this upcoming work in the years ahead?
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Thanks for that question, too. So, yeah, we've been very active in, you know, working on recruitment and retention efforts, making sure that people understand, our members understand the magnitude of the jobs. But we also stood up a Smart Careers website, which everybody can find that at smartcareers.org. We're going to use that as kind of like a clearinghouse or a resource about what the union is and what they do and where do we have the work, such as new member kits, so that members have an understanding of, you know, the way we are, the way we function, what leadership is, what are the positions, and what does all that mean? And we also describe the different industries that we're in, the diversity of sectors of work, and really the skill sets that go with that. So this new website will help members and non-union members and those that want to be in our union to an understanding of what's going on and what are we about, so they have a clearer understanding of that. Also, we continue to work with our partners at SMACNet. We need to continue to expand our outreach. We need to be able to meet the needs of these jobs that are popping up all over North America, United States, and Canada. What's the workforce needs? What's the skill sets that we're going to need on those projects? They will be different when you go from a chip plant to a hospital to a data center and those types of things. So, you know, the skill sets that are required. And it's important for us to make sure that we not only recruit new members, we also must retain our membership. You know, new members coming in and our current membership. So recruitment and retention is vitally important for us as we go through the phase of job opportunities and making sure that as a labor organization, we are inclusive. As a labor organization, we are welcoming people into our industry. Women, men of every ethnic group, every religion, that we are doing it. But it also means that I got your back. It also means that we understand. We call each other brother and sister in the labor movement, trade unionists, but we understand that we have each other's back. We understand that we're going to treat people with mutual respect. And when somebody has an issue on the job, we're going to stand up for that person and make sure that that person is a vital part of our industry and making sure that they understand that we're with them and that we're going to have their back. And as we recruit and as we retain our membership, we'll be able to leverage this new strength. You know, we got about $550 billion worth of work in the pipeline right now. So we're going to be able to grow. We're going to be able to meet that need. And we'll be able to leverage that size that we will be to capture more work in the future. This is decades worth of work. And as we stand in solidarity, as we make sure that we have each other's back, we will grow our union. We will grow our industry. And generations to come will be able to enjoy the career path that each one of us has, because we've had that mentorship that has been structured in our international for over 135 years now of making sure that we train each other, that we mentor each other, that we're there, that we got each other's back going into the future and giving the next generation a chance to have those same opportunities that we did. So thank you, Paul, for your question. And it's really exciting as we go into this chapter of jobs that we have and meeting the needs of these jobs that are all over North America is a challenge, but it's a great challenge to have. So thank you.
Thank you, General President Sellers. One of the top three biggest needs people have is to belong to something. And it's good to see that for a whole new generation of people out there across North America that we're fulfilling that need for a lot of people. And thank you for your leadership on this.
Yep. Thank you. Great to be here.